Agriculture in North America tends to be big. Big farms, big corporations, big machinery to work the land and harvest the food. Then there are the smaller operations, often family farms. And today's guest, who goes one size smaller, maybe several sizes smaller, Jean-Martin Fortier, he prefers JM, runs a garden, not a farm, in the Canadian province of Quebec. And he's the author of both French and now English editions of a book about what he does. In English, the book is called The Market Gardener, a successful grower's handbook for small-scale organic farming. JM Fortier and his wife, Maude Hélène Desroches, started Le Jardin de la Grelinette together in southern Quebec. It's known for its high productivity and profitability. Jardin is garden. Grelinette in English is Broad Fork, Broad Fork Gardens. JM Fortier, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
I understand the English version of the book is in front of us because of crowdfunding.
Yeah, that's a great story. My book came out in French about 2 years ago, and it got pretty popular here and in France and Belgium, but there was one woman that she works for an organization called Farm Start, and they're in Ontario, Canada, and their mission is to help young and aspiring farmers, you know, succeed in establishing in farming. And so they read the book in French, they really liked it, and they had a campaign to kickstart the funding to get it translated into English, and then it got translated. It raised 20 grand in, I think, 1 month, which was a big success. And then New Society Publishers picked it up and got it published in English.
And here we are, and it's a handsome book with lots of pictures and lots of diagrams and lots of explanations for how it is you do what you do. But for people to better understand not just the process but also the person, you're apparently not a country boy by origin anyway.
Yeah, I didn't grow up on a farm, neither did my wife. And we knew nothing about farming when we started. We studied at McGill University in environmental science, and we were interested in making a positive contribution somehow, and we really didn't know what to do. And so we did a trip, and we started to WOOF, which is, you know, to volunteer on organic farm. And that's where we discovered the farming reality, the agrarian lifestyle, and we've been hooked on farming ever since.
So you spent how much time? It sounds like right after college you hit the road?
Yeah, we hit the road. We went to Mexico because we were interested in fair trade. And so we worked on coffee farms for a little while there. And then we migrated up north and we went to New Mexico, which was really exotic for us back then. And I remember I had never seen a solar panel before going there. And then we met people that were building earth ships, which are, independent homes built out of tires in the deserts. And then we started to farm, and it was just like this crowd of people doing so amazing things. And we were really inspired. And then the farming scene in Santa Fe was really big, and it was very inspiring for us to be there and to be part of the farming world there. And we came back to Quebec, and we felt we wanted to recreate what we had seen there.
So you wanted to, which was a bit of a difficult proposition, I'm thinking, because the growing climate just a wee bit different between New Mexico and Quebec.
Yeah, the growing climate, but also just the vibe of it all. Because when we were in Santa Fe, there was a big farmers market there, and there was about 30 or 40 growers that would bring their stuff. And it was really popular, and there was a strong local support for the farmers there. And there was this energy. We work for a guy, he was a French-Canadian actually farming there, and we would bring our produce there, and people would line up and thank us for our work. And I always tell this story, is that I was working for Richard, and I was seeing how much money he was making in like 3 hours at the market, and I was like, wow, this is a pretty good setup. And so that was my first encounter with what farming, you know, can be, which is very different from what it is like in the ag business. And when we came back to Quebec, it was also about, you know, adapting to the growing season, but also recreating this enthusiasm and this interest for local agriculture. And it really picked up in the last 6-7 years here in Quebec, and really proud and happy to be part of that.
Even before you began to work on farms in Mexico and New Mexico, had you formed some opinions about ag business as it is done in North America generally?
Yeah, we had studied hog farms in Quebec, how destructive they were for the ecology and environment. But, you know, honestly, organic wasn't as it is now. Like, the movement wasn't, you know, that was in early 2000. And I myself wasn't as much aware as I am now about, you know, the downfalls of industrial ag for our health and for the environment. And, you know, corporate control of all of that. But I had studied that same kind of problem for different things, energy. And so it always kind of boils down to the same way of looking at the world. And I quickly realized that farming was a very positive way to make a difference, because we're creating not only, you know, produce from scratch, but we're also integrating in fair trade because we're selling directly. And the fact that we're growing organic on our farms makes it, you know, and it's a diversified farm, you know, we have a diversified ecosystem. We're getting away from monocultures, and it's just everything we do as organic farmer is very positive, and it's shaping the world, I think, in a positive way. So I figured that out pretty early, and that was a big push for me to stay with that trade.
To stay with a very small scale as well. The book is called The Market Gardener. Jean-Martin Fortier, J.M. Fortier, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author. It's a successful grower's handbook to small-scale organic farming. We'll come back and talk more specifically about what J.M.'s been up to in Quebec with his wife, Maud Hélène. And we will take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with The Market Gardener in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're talking today about farms and when they get small enough to be called gardens. Today's guest works the line between them pretty well. Jean-Martin Fortier, or J.M. Fortier of Quebec, is the creator with his wife, Maud Hélène Desroches, of Le Jardin de la Grelinette, Broad Fork Gardens in Quebec. And he's written a book about their experiences there. It's a how-to book as well, now in an English edition called The Market Gardener, a successful grower's handbook for small-scale organic farming. Lots of questions, lots of answers in the book. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. JM, how humble were your first efforts at farming once you returned to Quebec from your long Southwest road trip?
Oh, that's a great question, because they were really humble. I remember it was really a garden, and we were farming about a fifth of an acre, and only hand tools, obviously. But I remember my wife, Maud Hélène, she would put the seeds by hand, and she was really fast at it. So she was in charge of all the seeding on the farm. And, you know, we were catering to about 30 families. We had a 30-member CSA, and we were bringing our produce at the local farmer's market. And we were, I think, grossing around $12,000 or $15,000 in sales. But the best part about that was that we didn't have a lot of expenses because we were on rented land. We had set up a summer camp, lived in a teepee for two seasons. And basically, you know, we didn't have any expense. So that, even if it wasn't a big amount of money, most of it was coming back to us. And obviously, having a teepee in Quebec, you know, made it so that in the winters we wanted to leave. And so we for the two seasons we started, we went first to Cuba, visited farmers there, hot weather. But also it was really great because we were visiting farmers that were farming without tractors. Because in Cuba, when the Soviet Union fell apart, these guys didn't have any fossil fuels for to put in the tractor, or even, you know, tractor parts to repair the old ones that were old Soviet tractors. So they reinvented their whole agriculture to be organic, and in vegetable production, they were farming on permanent raised beds of, you know, with hand tools. And we were seeing acres and acres and acres of these permanent raised beds. And that was really influential for us when we started the farm where we're at now in 2005. And so our starts were modest, but it was an adventure, and you know, it was a great time remembering how it was. It was cold in the winters, but that's why we went to Cuba.
No doubt. So I'm curious about the yields, though. You talked about 30 members in your CSA, but a fifth of an acre of land, which is about the size of a suburban house plot, or maybe a little bigger than that.
Oh yeah. Well, I think people don't understand how much production you can get about on small spaces, and it's just fabulous. And when we got more interested in developing this idea and trying to make both salaries only from a small plot, we were reading a lot of books coming from California, you know, How to Grow More Vegetables from John Jevon, High Yield Gardening, and all these square foot gardening, all these books that teach you how to maximize space. And so we took a lot of these principles but brought them on a commercial scale on the new farm that we bought in 2005. And that's been our goal ever since, because the farm that we bought is about 2 acres, so it's about the size of a football field. And so we've had this land constraint, and so made it so that we needed to really maximize productivity and yields to make, you know, enough money to generate 2 salaries from our farm.
Well, you call it a farm, but at 2 acres, was it even being used as a farm before?
No, it used to be a rabbit farm, so there was a big building. It was a 40 by 100 building. Now it's now, half of it is now our house, and the other half is a warehouse where we process and wash the vegetables. But no, it was a little prairie, and at one point they had goats here. And the funny thing with that piece of land, it was kind of too expensive for people to just think about farming it, because, you know, there was just a big building, and what are you going to do on 1 acre except park your machinery? And it was zoned green. So in Quebec, we have zoning laws that restrict what you can do with certain pieces of agricultural land. And so people from the city couldn't just buy it and tear it down and build a castle on it, because we're in the eastern townships of Quebec, and it's a pretty nice area. It's a really nice climate for Quebec. And so we were fortunate and lucky to find this rabbit house, and we've made it our farm now, like Relinette, like you said.
JM Fortier is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of The Market Gardener, now out in an English language edition. So you decided you were going to stay small scale then. I mean, there was never any entertainment of going a whole lot larger than the original fifth of an acre you were renting.
Yeah, well, our thought process back then is that, first of all, we didn't have a lot of money. So, you know, we didn't have, you know, the capital to buy, you know, a tractor, 2 tractors, and to build an infrastructure, a warehouse, to accommodate all of that. And we had been farming with hand tools, and we thought, you know, instead of growing bigger and mechanizing the farm, why don't we intensify what we're doing and try to make it really productive, every square inch, and really manage it well. And so that was our goal. And with what we had visited in the past, you know, in Cuba, and we also had been to France and California, and we just went on with this idea of permanent beds. And that is really the backbone of our cropping system, because the permanent beds, what they do is that, you know, tractors are really useful if you're tilling, if you're plowing, if you're shaping soil. But if you're always working on the same beds, you don't need to be moving all that dirt around. And so that was like the original thought. And then we acquired, you know, a walking tractor, which is made in Italy, which is really appropriate to work on this kind of size. And then we just discovered and invented some new tools, and because of the land constraint, for the last 10 years, we've been growing more products, more production, but always on that same space. And so we've had to learn how to optimize what we were doing. And that's really the focus of what's written in the book, The Market Gardener. And that's, I think, the best advice to people who want to start a farm is to start small, but make sure that you really make it nice, really make it, design it product with production in mind, and really make it productive, because that's how you can make ends meet at the end.
Without the big overhead, without getting the gigantic tractor and all the other things you would have needed for a big farm, did you require that much in startup money? Did you have to get bank loans, anything like that?
Yeah, well, for buying all the equipment that we bought on the farm in 2004, it came to about 40 grand, which might seem like a lot of money, but we had a loan, and it really wasn't a good one. It was about 10% over 5 years, but it was digestible because it came down to about eight grand a year. And compared to how much gross sales we were producing already at that time, it was, it was very digestible. And so the fact that we're using hand tools that are really less expensive, and we've been farming with these tools for 10 years now, so they've been paid off a long time ago.
So when we talk about not having a lot of mechanization, using a lot of hand tools, people are going to assume this is back-breaking work. How hard do you have to work?
No, these tools, yeah, don't get me wrong. We do work really hard, and farming, there's nothing easy. Everything we sell, we need to grow ourselves. But the tools that we use on the farm, they're simple, but they're in their design, they're really well made, so that we're always working upright. And, it's not weeding on your knees. We're cultivating the soil. We're doing a lot of weed prevention. That really helps a lot. And we've just developed this whole skill set of how to farm small scale, but using the appropriate technologies. And if people are interested in seeing these tools, they can visit my website, themarketgardener.com, and they'll see all these tools that most of even experienced gardeners are not that used to seeing, because they're made for professional use.
We're talking to Jean-Martin Fortier, J.M. Fortier, who is the author of the book, The Market Gardener. He and his wife, Madeleine Desroches, work the Les Jardins de la Grelinette, Broad Fork Gardens in Quebec. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions, comments, information you'd like to know about creating your own small-scale garden, perhaps. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You make an interesting comparison in the book, J.M., between how hard you have to work on the garden and how hard it was to produce the book in the first place, sitting at a computer.
Yeah, because people always ask me, yeah, I'd like to do that job. I'd like to have a market garden, but I'm 40 or I'm 50. It's probably too much work. And I always answer, I've spent about a year and a half sitting in front of my computer screen writing a book, and that's a lot tougher on your body than going outside and physically working the gardens to make a living. And one is healthy, and the other one I think it isn't.
So you mentioned that working with raised beds. I want to get into some of the nitty-gritty details of what goes on at the garden. So the raised beds, we have to do the standard wood borders and all that sort of stuff to make them raised in the first place?
No, they don't need to be wooden contoured, because we have excess water in our climate here. So in the spring, what we really want is have the water drain away from the beds. And so they're raised, but they're not fixed. And every couple of years, we need to re-raise them. And just to give you a scope of what I'm talking about, we have all of our beds are 30-inch by 100 feet long, and we have 180 of them that are double-cropped, so meaning there's one crop, and then it's succeeded by another crop, and we'll try and put a third crop in time. So we're getting more than one crop from the same bed area, and so that's how, and everything is really densely seeded and planted, so that's why even if it's on an acre and a half, it's about 10 times more production, because everything is so compact and there's a lot of successions going into the garden.
Thank you, by the way, for giving the non-metric measurements. I know you tend to work on that in Canada.
Yeah, it's true.
So the finer details then, you keep the crops really closely spaced. What are some of the advantages there?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of them. First of all, there's more yields per square foot. But also because the vegetables, when they're really close to one another, their leaves touch, and then you form a canopy. And this canopy is important because it retains moisture, which is really important for the growth of the vegetable, but also for all the micronutrients and the soil organisms that are working in the soil. That's the environment they want. They want covered soil that is, more humid. But also, we're shading out the weeds. And that makes a big difference. And so there's a lot of advantage in the canopy. And the canopy is possible only if you have really, really good soil structure. And soil structure allows the roots of the vegetables to shoot down. And so if you want to have these high yields, of intensively closed space crops, you need to be working on your soil, building up soil, making sure that it's fertile, loose. So all of our tools that we use on the farm are, you know, are in that spirit of not, you know, we don't use a rototiller, for example, because it's inverting the layers and it's bringing up weed seeds from the bottom up, and it's kind of, you know, pretty much destroying your soil every time you're using it. So we have tools where we use shallow tilling, and we have a tool like a broad fork, which helps to open up the soil in the bottom, but without inverting the layers. So there's a lot to say about that, but it's a cropping system. It all works with one another, and so that's the important take-home message there.
So the broad fork, again, for which the farm is named, the broad fork gardens, I should say, Les Jardins de la Grelinette, is this really like an aerator? You mentioned that you're getting into the soil, but you're not turning it over.
It's like a big fork that mm-hmm. you plant into the ground, and with the action of the lever, you just kind of open up the soil. And that allows air in, and it allows the soil to be really loose for the roots to be able to shoot down. And this whole idea of not inverting the layers is because, you know, there's an ecology that forms into the soil. There's, you know, there's layers of earthworms that are there. There's, you know, spiders or all these creatures. And if you're always inverting the layers, if you're always taking your soil and flipping it upside down, these guys, they have to recreate their habitat all the time. And so
you make it sound like a freeway coming through a town.
Yeah, it's pretty much that's what it is. And so you want to be gentle, and you want to have the earthworms actually do the work for you. And that's what we've done on our farm. We've replaced mechanical tillage with biological tillage because we've harnessed the power of the earthworms in our system.
JM Fortier again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. The book is The Market Gardener, a successful grower's handbook for small-scale organic farming. Does the dense planting, JM, suck the nutrients out of the soil faster? Do you wear the soil out through this process at all?
No, because we're building up soil. And we're building up soil because, again, we're not turning it. Because when you bring air into the soil, it's like blowing on fire. All your organic matter kind of disappears. And because we're adding a lot of compost, we're putting about 40 tons per acre, and we're taking good care. We've checked our pH, and we're shallow because we're tilling only on the first inch of the soil. We're not disturbing again the bottom of the soil. So our soil is actually much better now than it was when we started. And so this idea of intensification, that's why it's called biologically intensive, because you intensify your production but by working on the biology side of your soil.
And what are the chief crops then? I mean, we see carrots in the book, but what else do you have planted there?
We have pretty much everything on the farm. We grow about 40 different crops, and some that we don't grow are storage crop, like potatoes. And because this is, you know, we're a market garden. We produce to sell at the farmer's market. And, you know, my neighbor here, he's mechanized, fully mechanized. So when he's, you know, doing potatoes, he has a potato planter, and he's harvesting them with a potato harvester, and he has a mechanical brusher. And I don't. So, I'm harvesting with a pitchfork, and I'm brushing each potato by hand, one at a time. And when I go to market with my potatoes, I can't really say that mine is more artisanal or, you know, a potato is a potato. So I don't have an advantage to grow crops like these. But when we're growing carrots with their tops on, or, you know, super sweet lettuces, all these more fragile vegetables, then since I'm doing top quality with Modelaine and we're bringing this to market, it's even the bigger growers, they can't compete because we're there, we're smiling, we're presenting our produce, people know who we are, and again, we're aiming for top quality vegetables. So,
yeah. Have you had any big setbacks? Have you had any crop failures or things that hadn't intended to go on?
We've had so many of them. We've had lots of problems with, you know, insect problems. We've had some disease some years. We've had some crops that took us quite a you know, a few years to figure out how to grow best. But that's the normal learning curve when you're new in a trade. And, you know, over the year, every time we've came to a hurdle, we've jumped over it and we've learned from it, and we've integrated all of these teachings in our crop planning calendar so we don't make the same mistakes the same year, the year after. And, it's not an easy trade to be able to grow 40 different vegetables at the same time and going to market with all of that. But it's fairly feasible. And again, coming back to my take-home message, I think the smaller the farm, the easier it is to manage.
Much more to talk about with J.M. Fortier. His book is The Market Gardener. He, in fact, is the market gardener himself. He and his wife running their garden in Quebec, in Canada. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your phone calls and emails are welcome. We'll be back on the Jefferson Exchange with J.M. and you in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today is a small-scale farmer or a large-scale gardener. Take your pick. He prefers the term the market gardener. That is the title of the book by Jean-Martin Fortier. J.M. and his wife, Maudeline Desroches, run Le Jardin de la Grelinette together in Quebec. It's a micro farm or a macro garden. Jardin de la Grelinette means Broad Fork Gardens. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about how they managed to get 40 different vegetables and make a profit off of 2 acres of land at their little farm. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. The book does get very specific, as we mentioned, about techniques and choices. One of them is figuring out how to pick a site in the first place. What are some of the recommendations you make about the kinds of soil to look for and other conditions that would be optimum for growing vegetables?
Yeah, well, I tend to think that the soil, there's an old saying here in Quebec, the soil is always as good as the farmer who's growing on it. But, you know, given the choice, you want to have something that is on the loamy side. But there's more to that. There's soil, but there's also the slope. You want to have sodden exposures to really warm up, especially here in northern Canada. That makes a big difference. Drainage is an important feature. But also proximity to market. You know, if you're in your early 20s, let's say, and you don't have a lot of money and you want to buy, and you're thinking, you know, I'll buy 4 or 5 hours, you know, from the big town because the land is less expensive, but you need to figure out that you'll be commuting to farmers market, and it's going to take a lot out of you. So proximity to market is important, and there's a whole bunch of them. And, you know, finding the right site, finding the perfect site is probably impossible, but you know, you need to be looking at all of the aspects to try to make a really enlightened choice. And so that's how I framed that in the book. And I think it also, you know, when you're down at choosing a site for where you want to farm, it can also get pretty emotional. So you know, you need to be looking at somewhat more of the facts, you know. Like when we started farming, me and Maudeline, you know, for us the view was something that was important, because we thought, you know, when we stop, we want to contemplate, look at the mountains and the stream and just feel bliss with all of that. But later on I realized that, you know, looking at the view of the mountain is not really as important, because you don't want to be stopping and being in bliss. You want to be working really committed so that at 5 o'clock you can stop and hang out with your kids and, you know, go for a bike ride. And so there's a lot to learn, but I guess that's where a veteran grower can really help, you know, with some suggestions to people that are starting.
So you mentioned getting off at 5 o'clock, and you also make it clear in the book that given the growing season in Quebec, you pretty much get winters off then, don't you?
Oh yeah, today we're in our 20s today, and it's going to be colder than that for the next few months. But that's not such a bad thing. We can push the limits and really get production all the way till December, And again, we have hoop houses, and we have one heated greenhouses, and we can get production as early as April. But that for us, actually, in our lifestyle, having the winters, like having 2 months off, is kind of a blessing, because we're happy to just shut down and just take a rest and do other stuff, which is, you know, it's a race all year round. So we have these winter months to really kind of relax more and pay our bills, which is packing all year.
You mentioned choosing sites for many reasons, marketing on one hand and growth on the other. Have you had much discussion with people who come from regions like the one where we broadcast, where most of the rain tends to fall outside of the growing season, unlike Quebec, for example?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've visited growers in California, and I've been a lot to the south. It's a different setup, you know. We have excess water in areas like California. It's more of a drought scenario, but you know, there's a lot of simple technology, drip irrigation, and but you need to be thinking. You know, this whole idea of creating canopies with the leaf of your crops really, I think, are part of the solution, because having bare soil, exposed soil, is really what you don't want to have, because that's where you lose all your humidity from the soil. So, you know, there's some techniques that are, you know, they can work regardless, or if you're in a drought scenario or excess water scenario.
Did you have any problems with mold or mildew or anything, though, from having all the moisture trapped under the
canopy?
Well,
that's why the beds are raised. So that really helps to dry faster.
Oh, because of the drainage just being raised.
Yeah, and again, the site, if you have air drainage on the site because of slope, that really helps. But on our farm, it hasn't been such a big concern over the last few years.
You make much in the book about design as well, laying out where things grow and where certain functions on the garden or the farm take place. What have you learned from laying out your own operation?
Well, I've learned a lot from permaculture, and permaculture teaches you to look at things in a systematic way. And so we've looked at, before, you know, even the first bed was dug here on the farm, we had a map, and we had made a layout where we were, you know, looking at where everything would go in relation to the other, and we wanted to save on downtime. So the configuration is that the rabbit coop is in the middle, the warehouse is in the middle of all of our fields. And so when we're harvesting, we're never really far away from where we need to go and bring the vegetables back. And so just that circular pattern makes it so that we don't have a lot of downtime on the farm, where you're walking, you know, 20 minutes to go to the fields, or 10 minutes, and then you forget your field knife, or your intern forgot to go to the bathroom, and he's walking back 15 minutes, so you're losing 30 minutes there. And so all of that was kind of included in the design stage of the farm, along with a 10-year crop rotation and all of that. And that's a big part, I think, of setting up a farm. And, again, permaculture is such a great teacher in that way. So we were lucky and fortunate to have a lot of reading material about that. And when it was time for us to implement the farm, we had a good plan and we knew what we were doing.
J.M. Fortier, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of The Market Gardener, A Successful Grower's Handbook for Small-Scale Organic Farming. You just mentioned crop rotation. I'm trying to figure out, you mentioned at least at first when you're starting out, crop rotation might be a little bit overblown.
Yeah, that's the funny advice I give in the book, is that, you know, the first few years, people that are starting a market garden perhaps shouldn't worry about, you know, crop rotation, and where you just plant anything anywhere, because, you know, if you want to do a serious crop rotation regime, you need to have restrictions, and so you'll limit the areas where you can have certain crops, because you want to have 4 years intervals between each of them. And so that takes time to know, you know, how much production you'll be doing, and when it takes a few years for your production to stabilize. And I think that's, at that point, you need to be thinking about the mid and long-term aspects of your soil, and that's the time to do a crop rotation. But the first year or two or three, even, perhaps it's just better to plant anything anywhere and just figure out, you know, 5 years down the road, what's going to be your scale, and then plan according to that.
I get a real sense of your willingness to learn from mistakes. Your willingness to fail, to learn from the things that go wrong.
Yeah, well, we have no choice because that's the better, that's the learning curve, and that's how you know these things. And I have to say though, if I had a book like that, like The Market Gardener, when we started, it would have saved us about 5 years of learning and experimenting with all of this. So hopefully, our shared knowledge and experiments can help other young and inspiring farmers kickstart their project and have success earlier on in their adventures. That's my goal.
How steep a learning curve for you, JM? Because it's not just that you get into soil science and the elements of soil, the clay, the sand, et cetera, but even getting into the chemistry of what goes on in the soil. Was this stuff that you already knew from your time at McGill or stuff you just picked up along the way?
No, it was learning by doing. And there's a lot of great books about soil biology. And when you start to read them, thinking that you can apply some of this knowledge to what you're doing, it really makes a lot of sense. And that's how I got interested in that, because I had an interest, a stake into learning how, soil microorganisms work so that I can harness them to benefit from their use. And, we're really happy here at the farm. We're doing applied ecology on a daily basis. And there's not that many trades that can say that they do that. So we're blessed. And that's been a big part of us learning, because there's an interest to understand the biology side of it, to have it work on our side.
So this is an organic farm, too. We did say this is small-scale organic farming. So what do you use for fertilizer, for example?
We use compost. Compost is like the premium, it's the ultimate amendment you can put, because you're adding organic matter content, but you're also adding fertilizing power, and you're adding all these bacteria and micronutrients that are in the compost. So we've been using a lot of compost, vermicompost, and, I think it's really the way to go. If you want to farm, you should go organic, and then compost becomes the ultimate soil amendment to build up soil over time.
Now, what about some of the other issues that will present themselves to farms? You mentioned weeds a bit and some of the ways in which those are controlled, but what about bugs and what about deer, for example, too?
Yeah, bugs, a lot of things we do right on the farm, but insect control is not easy, and we've managed to mitigate a lot of these problems by using nets. So we're using insect nets as barriers. And so it's a physical control, and it's ecological, and it's a way to do things that really works. And for deer, for the longest time, we've had our dog that was just roaming around and barking at night, and that was enough to keep the deers at bay in our small market garden. And now, since we've been doing this for a long time, our dog is getting a bit older, and his scents are not as good as they used to be. So last year was actually the first year that we've had somewhat of deer problems in the garden. So we're thinking about perhaps putting an electrical fence now.
Interesting to think about the things that can affect that operation, though. Just because the dog got old, you're having more problems with deer. That's
weird. Oh, yeah. Well, everything is linked to one another. We're a little ecosystem here, and so the dog's a big part of it.
Outside of the ecosystem, we talked a lot about what goes on the farm. Haven't talked that much about the marketing end of things and how long it took you to establish your first CSA and to get people to sign up for it. You mentioned 30 customers with that first operation.
Yeah. Well, we were lucky because when we started, there was a grower that was stopping. So he gave us his 30 CSA members. We took them on, and then we went from 30 to 50, second year. And then when we bought the farm, we went to 100, which is a big jump. But, about that time, we had invested in tools, and we had more land. And then we went to 120, 140, and 180, and then we started to do less CSA and more markets. And what's great about this is that when you start small, you can just, you learn the skill as you develop your clientele. And that's really, I think, the way to go, because if you want to be too big too fast, the learning curve is pretty steep. And so I think, you know, we've been now the last 5 years, our sales have been growing about 10% a year, 15%. It's not that much, but it's, we're not, you know, we're doing more on the same amount of land and pretty much with the same expenditures. So we're just profiting more from all of that.
Are you getting lots of people coming, certainly spurred on by the French version of the book, to come look at what it is you do and visit the farm and want to learn more?
That's something that we'll need to figure out in the future because, yeah, it has attracted a lot of people that are curious, and they read the book, they really liked it, and they want to come and say hi. And, you know, when we say hi to everyone, then we're not working anymore. So there's an issue there, but it's all good. And I think I'm just happy that people are interested in learning how to grow food for themselves and for others. And, you know, I think that we're slowly thinking about this idea of replacing mass production with production by the mass, and I think that's where agriculture needs to go.
People so often think that, you know, the next step is to, you know, everybody talks about wanting to grow a business. Are you fine with the scale you're operating now and not particularly see any reason to go bigger?
No, we want to grow better.
Better, not bigger.
Better is better.
All right. Jean-Martin Fortier, JM, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
All right, you guys have a great day.
You too. The book is called Bye. The Market Gardener, A Successful Grower's Handbook for Small-Scale Organic Farming. And that'll do it for today's Jefferson Exchange. The Takeaway is coming up next. If you're listening in the morning or evening rebroadcast, it's followed by news from the BBC. The Exchange is produced by Charlotte Dern of JPR News. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please take it easy with all the wind and the rain out and about today. Join us again next time on the Jefferson Exchange, and have a great day.